For the next talk, Lennart is going to talk to us about, surprise, surprise, TPMs. Let's welcome Lennart. Hi.
So I was a bit sick yesterday, so I don't have the usual energy that I otherwise have, but I hope it's sufficient for the talk. If you have any questions, please interrupt me. I'd rather have the questions right away instead of just at the end. This talk's supposed to be kind of a successor talk to a talk very similarly named that I did last year. And it's supposed to be an update of about everything that has changed in systemd regarding TPM stuff since last year, and what's now on the agenda for the next time. Yeah, just to give you a little bit of a recap on the goals, right? Like this is basically, I literally copied this from the last year's slides, but just to make everyone understand what the goal is that I actually have with all of this, right? Like, so the general goal is to catch up with what other OSs have, right? Like, most relevant OSs nowadays have by default TPM or some equivalent measurement system integrity concept. Windows has it, Android has it, Chrome OS has it, Mac OS has it, like the iPhone OS has it. Everybody has it. So the goal here really is to kind of catch up with that so that ideally generic Linux distributions have the same level of system integrity. This specifically means that we can default to measured boot and actually lock disk encryption things to that. That we, however, not only focus on disk encryption, but all kinds of other encryption, like on systemd specifically. This means credentials for systems, for services, which is basically a secure way to parameterize keys and the configuration and secrets and things like that for services. Another goal is a secure parameterization of boot. Like I think many of the talks in this room earlier today kind of glanced over this already. When we do, when we have a trusted boot, then we somehow need to pass parameters into this. I mean, this like for single purpose OSs is not so important, but if we actually want to go for generic OSs, this parameterization always matters because you want to configure this or that or something else. So, and that always implies some form of authentication first. Confidential computing is also pretty relevant because, like, on a confidential computing system, you kind of have to have this; otherwise, the whole exercise is pretty pointless. One goal is also to open up TPM usage for other purposes, so that we provide, you know, if you want to use the TPM properly, you kind of have to provide OS primitives for doing policies on these objects that you manage in the TPM. And with systemd, with systemd PCR log, which we'll talk about later, this is kind of the goal. In general, the goal is to be good enough so that this can be turned off in generic Linux and is not something that distributions have to think about anymore. It's not an add-on feature or something that hence has a likely chance to not work, but it's more something that is just core part of the OS. That is the goals. But of course, it's still far off to actually come there. Then here another recap about all the components. I think many of them I introduced in my last year's talk. This time I just compressed it into one slide. I hope most of you probably are already aware of these. Very quick summary of what they do. Systemd crypt setup is like this integration thing that is similar to the low-level crypt setup that can unlock disks and do TPM stuff and a couple of other things like FIDO and things so on. Systemd crypt unroll is kind of the counterpart to it that sets up the disk for this. Systemd PCR extend is a tool that can measure stuff like to PCRs and soon other things. Systemd PCR phase is the same thing, but it's a multi-call binary, and PCR phase focuses on measuring the boot phase so that you have something that you can use inside of your TPM policies that you can basically say, this disk shall only be unlockable in the inner RD, but not after. Systemd PCR machine is supposed to measure some, like the machine ID primarily, so that we have some PCRs that can reflect the system identity. Systemd PCR FS is pretty closely related to that. It measures the identity of the file systems used, because to a large degree, NOS is defined by the file system is located on. Systemd stub is this EFI stub that runs in UFI mode shortly before the kernel initializes, picks up various things, measures a couple of things, and then hands control to the actual kernel. Systemd measure is a tool to offline predict and sign the measurements that a kernel that is equipped with systemd stub will make. It's mostly supposed to be used offline so that vendors can prepare signed predictions of the PCR values. UKeyFi has been mentioned many times, I think, in the earlier talks, is the thing that builds unified kernel images for you based on a kernel inner ID and all the other parts. Systemd PCR log is, I think, my talk here at this conference last year introduced that. The first time I publicly talked about this, is supposed to be this management tool that can create local PCR policies based on one is inherently not vendor controlled, OS vendor controlled, but is inherently local to the system. Captures local firmware and things like this, and can also lock down configuration, basically everything that's local and that the OS vendor cannot possibly predict on the build machines. Systemd report is kind of related to this. It's a dynamic repartitioner, and it's relevant in the TPM context because it can run at early boot on the first boot, basically create an encrypted disk partition and enroll it to TPM. Systemd creds and import credentials I mentioned this briefly earlier. It's about the secure parameterization of services and systems too, by the way, so that we can pass little bits of information into services, and they are decrypted, like they're generally encrypted, but they're decrypted the moment that the service is activated, and that in a way that is locked to TPM. So one thing I would like to make clear is that the security model that I go for, of course, whenever you try to build a secure system, you need to know what the security model is that you subscribe to. Let me make clear before we continue that my focus is really on measured boot very much, and not so much on secure boot, right? Measured boot is the thing where we basically allow everything to boot, but make measurements about each time we jump into something and into the next step. And then can bind security this. Secure boot is the thing where we, before we invoke something, we verify a signature. I think in the long run, as we move to image-based systems, I think the security that you provide must be hooked, must be based much more on measured boot than on secure boot, because I see the systematic problem that secure boot doesn't really scale with high-frequency generation of new images, right? Because you need to get your stuff signed, that makes it complex, right? It's not as trivial anymore as building a local image locally and just deploying it. You have to build it, sign it, and that involves all kinds of bureaucracy, maybe even talking to Microsoft to get the signing key approved and things like that. So while I think secure boot might be useful, and particularly when you enroll your own keys, I think it's not what we should base our security policy on. I think measured boot is much more interesting in this, and much more democratic, if you so will, because anyone can just set this up and then basically say that in a tofu mode, basically say, yeah, on first time I start the system, I lock my disk encryption to the state it is currently in, and then for future boots, I just go I don't allow deviation from that setup. There's also underlying at least how secure boot is currently deployed, with everything tied to Microsoft, Microsoft's keys, and Microsoft's basically giving everybody their own keys and approving them. I think the security benefit of secure boot is relatively limited because nobody's actually reviewing what is signed there. Anyway, I wanted to just mention this, that this is kind of what I care about for. I know that others disagree with this and think secure boot is the best thing in the world, but again, this is I'm not saying that you shouldn't use secure boot, I'm just saying that I think measured boot is where the security angle comes from, because you can actually lock your secrets to measured boot. You cannot really, you can do that to secure boot too, but because the default is so wide open, it's useless. Okay, so much about everything that I wanted to make clear before we go to the actual technical details. So let's now jump on the actual technical details, unless somebody has any question about this stuff so far, but I see no hands up. Okay, so what's new? One of the things I most recently worked on, which I think are kind of important, is, and this has come up before between the lines in some of the talks here, is until recently, you had the systemd PCRLog policies, which were the ones that are cover inherently local stuff, I just mentioned this, and the other ones are the signed PCR policies, which are supposed to cover the stuff that is under control of the US vendor. Until recently, we had no way to combine these policies, which is quite a gap. And it was very hard to figure out how we can actually combine these in a sensible way. Because, TPM policies don't really allow to combine these kind of policies. This is because, like, the underlying primitive is, like, for one of them is called policy authorized NV, and the other primitive is called policy authorized. And you just, while you're in theory, can combine any kind of policy policy primitive that the TPM provides you with in any way, these two you cannot. I had many discussions with the TCG people and others about, like, how the hell can we solve this problem? People came up with lots of ideas, and all of them were horrible because, like, most of them involved, like, not putting these two policies on equal footing. By equal footing, I mean that, the way the solutions that were suggested is that we basically say that the local policy says you're also the vendor policy needs to be fulfilled. But in this case, this would mean they are not on equal footing, because the local policy could be changed to say, no, do not care about the global one. And hence, the local one would be more important than the global, the vendor one. So, the solution in the end was really easy, just adding key sharding. So basically, that we do the actual disencryption with a key that's twice as long as we normally need, and then one half of it we protect with one policy and the other with the other, which should provide all the security properties that we need. It's, it would be better if we could express this with TPM primitives instead of doing this with OS concepts, like OS level concepts. I think from security perspective, everything's fine now. Which basically means, at this point in time, I would start recommending distributions to just do this, right? Like, sign your UKIs, ship your UKIs with systemd measure prepared to PCR signatures, and start doing systemd PCR log for local policies. And then I think I changed everything so that by default now, if both of these are there, we'll stop making use of both of these in combination. And I think this is the model that we should go for. Any questions so far? Otherwise, I would just... I mean, I'm going to continue doing this, right? Like, just iterating through all the stuff that...
Here's a question.
But I would much prefer if we have a discussion.
Just very quickly, making the key twice as large still means that it's going to be hashed for the actual key, or is it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So this is done before, basically, the Lux key slot management thingy. It will hash it further, right?
So... secure boot and measured boot are not the same thing. Secure boot involves signatures, certificate authorities, shim, that kind of stuff.
Correct?
No.
Well, I mean, strictly speaking, measured boot can involve that too, but yes.
Yeah. So is measured boot technically UEFI, or is it something else?
The secure boot stuff is older than the measured boot stuff, because secure boot is something you can implement purely in software, and this is one of the things that UEFI introduced and has been there around for a long time. A measured boot is something you need a discrete, or not necessarily discrete, but you need a TPM in some form for this, right? Like, because it's basically about having these special registers, PCRs, that can do, like, hashing. Like, I mean, strictly speaking, they're very similar, because one of them hashes and looks for a signature before it executes code, and the other one just does the measurement, which is a fancy word for hashing and storing the hash somewhere, and then you do the signature checking later, like, for example, with the signing policy that I was suggesting. So it's mostly the difference is, the cryptographic distinction isn't really there. Both is dealing with signatures of stuff that was hashed, except that one doesn't forbid you of booting things, and the other one does, if you follow what I mean.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay, otherwise we'll go to the next one. One thing that I think is kind of relevant is, I mean, it's not directly TPM stuff, but also it's kind of TPM stuff, which is multi-profile UKIs. I think the wider Linux ecosystems kind of has accepted UKIs as their new god, which is great, but UKIs bring certain problems with them, and we added various things of dealing with these problems like PE add-ons and these kind of things. But one thing that I relatively recently added was multi-profile UKIs. Multi-profile UKIs basically means that you can have one UKI that results in multiple menu entries in the boot menu, and you can pick one of them, and then that's the profile that's going to be booted. And a profile is just a combination of various PE sections, right? So you basically can say, I want to use the same kernel image, but I want to use it with three different init RDs or something. And then each of these combinations becomes a menu entry, and then the user can select something there. The primary use case for this is that you do not do this for init RDs, but you do it for the .cmd line part, so that you can have like three different kernel commands lines, and the use case would then, for example, be that you have one for, I don't know, recovery boot, and one for factory reset, or one for whatever the fuck you want to have it. Like, this is entirely up to you. I think it makes UKIs a lot more useful, because you can implement all these various things, and do not have to do any external tooling for this anymore. If you use multi-profile UKIs, they're a natural extension for the classic UKIs. In this case, the firmware will measure the full UKI with all its profiles, but then systemd stub only measures the selected combination of PE sections. I patched this through to all the components that we have, like systemd measure, UKFI, systemd stub, boot control, so that they all understand these multi-profile UKIs. Any question regarding that? There is a question.
So let's say you have a UKI with three init RDs, and you want to add a fourth one. Can you just update the UKI, or do you have to completely regenerate it with all init RDs?
So the way, because I was a lazy person, the way I implemented the code in UKIFI is that you actually take a base UKI, and then you extend it with one profile, and then you can call UKFI again for each profile. But of course, you can only do this safely before you secure boot sign it, right? Like, you cannot just take somebody's secure boot signed UKI and insert some additional stuff, obviously not. But otherwise, it was the quickest way to get to something working is that we do this incremental build, right? Like, you have one UKI, and then you extend it with another profile, and then with another profile, and so on. There's another question.
What is the limit of, in terms of number of command lines you can store in one UKI? I guess there is a PE section thingy.
Sorry, come again?
How many command lines can you store in the same UKI?
I think there's a limit that is, we make no limit on this. This is in PE, and I think it's 32 bit.
Okay. Minus
look at the
number
specs. I don't actually know. Like, we do whatever the fuck PE does. We make no additional restrictions. And PE is this weird format that is 32 bit, even on 64 bit machines, except for very few fields. It's way different from ELF there. Like, in ELF, when they went to 64 bit, they doubled the size of basically all fields. PE didn't do this. So my educated guess would be it's some 32 bit value of sections you can have. But you need to spend at least 2 sections per profile, so you can have 2 to 31 probably at most.
Not enough for Nix, though.
But that's an adjudicated guess. Check the specs. What's new? Next new, like system credentials, I already talked, or service credentials, I already talked about them. What we did recently is that we opened them up for unprivileged users. This also meant that systemd cruts kind of had to become a little IPC service, because we cannot assume that unprivileged users get access to the TPM. So there's now a service that you can talk to and get your stuff encrypted or decrypted, and it will has this nice little trick that it actually includes the identity information of the client, meaning user ID and things like that, in the encryption logic, so that basically, if you want to have your credential unlocked, you need to be the same user on the same system with the same TPM and things like that. This is something that the GNOME users, like, we had a talk early in the morning regarding the Fido stuff, where they want to make use of this. I actually would like to extend this further so that we also include information about the C group of the client, because it would suddenly be interesting, because C groups in effectively are an identifier for the service and hence the app. So we could perhaps have something like app scoped credentials, like encrypted credentials, which I think would be extremely useful. So that only an app that gets configured inside of a specific C group name, foobar or something, gets access to the credentials. And this is enforced cryptographically. Also, I mean, this already requires that we have a system service, because, of course, we need to make sure that the UID information that we get from the kernel is actually included in the encryption key, basically. And this basically, in a way, like, TPMs usually enforce policies that the TPM know about. The user identity, of course, is not a concept of TPMs, it's a concept of the OS, and hence we have to add it in at the OS level. Any questions about this?
Yes, one there. Then I have a question. Actually, while I work there, I can ask it. So, because it was mentioned in the previous talk this morning, for credentials, we do the sealing and encryption on the CPU, because we have the key on the on var and we mix them together. That means an attacker that can access that can get the keys. Would it make sense to have a mode where credentials are encrypted in the TPM instead, so that the OS can never see the private material?
I think that's already what happens. Like, what the only like, so if you use system credentials, there are two keys maintained. One key is in the TPM, and the other one is in the file system. The only reason why it is in the file system is because you can have multiple, like, you have multi-boot, right? Like, you can have multiple OSs on the same system. And I thought it would be weird if we allow if I install Fedora and Arch Linux on my system, that the Fedora thing could decode my Arch Linux secrets, if you so will, right? It's also there so that if we detect we are on a TPM-less system, right, like that doesn't have a TPM, that we have something reasonable to fall back, and that's basically a secret that we store in varlib somewhere with restricted permissions. But like, the assumption is that in a world where everybody has a TPM, the TPM blocks this and is providing the actual security, and the other thing is just and also there. That doesn't make things worse, but the security is hooked to the TPM, not to anything else. And we do not decode any secret from the TPM. We, like, on every encryption and decryption of credentials, we always go to the TPM and let the TPM do the work.
Yes, so I would like to go back to what you mentioned about application-specific credentials. Is there any reason for why, like, is there any relation with the kernel keying, and why do we need to use C groups where maybe, for example, systemd could, like, manipulate the kernel keying to store the key somewhere, and we could have a nice interface where we could request credential that could go up to the graphical interface saying, oh, please give me your email password, then it gets cached into the kernel keying only for that specific application that requested the password, and, like, interesting workflow can start.
So I mean, this is certainly a thing, right? Like, we have discussed, for example, in the HomeD concept, that we would have a per user secret that HomeD maintains for every user, basically. That is not the secret that users log in, but is something derived of the volume key of the home directory, and would include that into the credential stuff as well. So, which is very similar to what you suggest. I don't know, like, kernel keying, I have a love and hate relationship with that.
Me too, but
it's maybe, like, it needs to be fixed. You could do it in there, but the thing is, like, we want a delegation system, right? Somewhere where these things are overridden down the tree, and I don't know. We already have the C group thing. Like, ultimately, what we want to lock to against here is not necessarily secret, but I don't know, like it might make sense to have something like this. I've thought about this, if we should introduce a concept of a per service credential, like a per service secret basically that we give everybody. But I don't know, I need more use cases before we do something like this, because that would be primarily a service facing new API, new concept. And it would be pretty useless if people wouldn't actually be willing to use this kind of thing. I think the per user thing, we would be our own users, like consumers of this very quickly. So I think we can add this because we have a very clear use case for this. But I'm not sure if, like, I kind of have the suspicion that people who write services probably, yeah, I don't know, they don't want to do their own crypto. They just want to have a way how they can get the fucking secrets that they have. And if we supply to them, great. But if we give them just a secret, which they can use to do encryption with, then you might lose a lot of people. So I don't know, it's a raw interface, and I think we need to give them a higher level interface where they don't have to do these. So that's an answer. I don't know, I'm open to discussing this. I'm not just at this point convinced that this is something we should deliver, because
that makes
I
sense.
See that it might be difficult to get people to use this. Anything else at this point? Otherwise, let's go to the next one. This came up in last year's talk about the event log. We nowadays have a JSON-based event log, JSON-CL event log, so that it implements a TCG standard. It's not entirely JSON-CL, though, because JSON, like the CL spec from TCG, is kind of wonky. Like it defines, for example, a record number that should be included in every event log entry, and that basically means that if you want to attach something to the end, you always have to read the front to actually figure out what the next number is going to be that you append. And I decided that this is just wasteful, right? Like, because event logs can grow and will grow longer, and every time we add something, we have to count this or cache the value. This is just messy. So my solution to this is do not include the record number. But it's trivial to convert to the real thing, right? Like, if you just iterate through all the objects we write there and add an increasing record number, then you're there. So yeah, so it is basically JSON-CL, but not really JSON-CL, but trivial to convert. There's a varlink-based API to actually include your own measurements in this. It's it will do the event log update and the PCR stuff as atomic as we can do these things together. Of course, we cannot really do them atomic, but we provide locking and everything. This has one primary consumer, which is systemd PCR log. The new measurement API via Varlink, I'm not sure how useful it is actually at this point, because if you want to start measuring something, you need to have a PCR that you can measure it to. And there are no free PCRs. So yeah, great that we have this API. I don't know how useful is this. The next slide, I think it's the next slide, we'll talk about what we can do about this though. Yeah, but I think conceptually it's something we definitely want. And hence, it's already there. Yeah, any question regarding this? Okay, or it's not the next slide, but let's talk then about this first. One thing that I realized working a lot with TPMs, there is a disagreement how TPMs shall be available to the OS, like conceptually, because some people assume that TPM are this piece of hardware that is always accessible to the OS, but that's simply not true. Like, first of all, in Linux we do, I don't know, compile drivers as kernel modules, in particular in generic distributions, because there are many drivers that you have, and yeah, you don't always want to have them in the kernel. But even if we would link all drivers into the kernel, there are still environments, and many of those, where you have, because TPMs are ultimately just an API. They are not a hardware specification so much as primarily a way how you talk to one of these things. And I think we're moving into this world, and particularly in the clouds and stuff, where TPMs are gonna be vTPMs, right? So, and that often implies that they need to be started first, right? Like that there's a user space component that starts them. There's one, for example, Opti, that does this. But even in generic OSs, I think this is where things are going, right? Like that you have, I don't know, some enclave, some VM, encrypted VM or something that actually does the TPM stuff and then might be backed by a real TPM or might not be. But this kind of implies that the TPM is not always available. It's just available from some point on. And so accepting that this is how it is, we added a synchronization point to system to boot, basically, which just says when the TPM is available. And anything that wants to access the TPM, like for measurements, for unlocking disks and things like that, needs to be ordered after that. So summary is basically we support OPTI and generic distributions that do not compile all TPM drivers into the kernel better with this. Any questions so far? There is a question. Aaron.
At what time in boot is that synchronization target? Because I assume that in early boot, you also want to measure things to the TPM, right? How does that work?
It's in the inner-ready.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
So that point should usually be reached very shortly, hopefully, after the inner-ready, but after UDEV started doing its thing, right? Because UDEV is the thing that might make this stuff available.
And if you're not using systemd inner-RD, then you're... Then I guess it doesn't.
I don't understand the question.
Okay, yeah. Or if you boot without an initrd, for example, and you just boot into.
Well, you know, if you work without systemd, then you're fucked, right? Like you have to add all the synchronization points yourself. I mean, and you need to run daemons, right? I don't know.
Like, no, but in stage two, you run systemd, and I suppose some of the early boot components measure things into the TPM, or do they not?
Sorry, I didn't understand that.
Like, are there any early boot components in stage two that measure things into the TPM, and can they?
What do you mean by stage two?
Like not in the initrd, but in the rootfs where we switch into.
Yes, we do. We measure like a lot of places now the phase, right? Like, so basically the way how it works is now that the PCRs are generally available during firmware phases, right? Like SD boot and so on. They generally get access because firmware provides this, even in OPTI worlds and things like enclave worlds. But this is only for measurement. And then you transition to the kernel. The kernel has no access to the TPM usually as long as it initializes. Then the inner D gets control. Then we wait exactly as long as we need for the TPM to show up. Then we do the first measurement that we reach the inner-RD phase. Then we do stuff, possibly unlock the root file system. Then immediately before we leave the inner-RD, we do another measurement. Then we transition to the root FS. Then we do another measurement that we reach the root FS, basically. Then we another measurement when we just started running regular services. And finally, we do another measurement when we're ready. And then during shutdown, we do a couple of measurements as well.
Thanks.
I don't think the question was, if you don't do the initrd to rootfs transition, how do you do this? If you have you call them USI, Unified System Image, or whatever else you came up with. In that case, if the TPM commit comes up late, then you're screwed. I think the answer there is build it in the kernel. Don't do kernel modules or anything, right? Get the question?
A USI for me is basically where you build an initrd that claims not to be an initrd, right?
Yeah, exactly. But if you activate the TPM halfway to the boot of that, what do you do before that if you need to measure stuff? That is the question.
I mean, in this case, of course, there would be no initrd measurements being made because you never were in the initrd in the sense that systemd understands it. I mean, you would wrap it up as a CPIO and add it to the kernel as an initrd, but then from you wouldn't have etc initrd release file in there, which is how systemd detects if it's an initrd, right? So so from systemd perspectives, you're not an initrd, even if from the kernel perspectives you are. And then hence these two measurements about the initrd would not happen, but the TPM 2.target would still apply, right?
But the question is, do we have measurements that we do before that? That is the question.
No, the first measurement that we do from user space is the one that we just entered the initrd. And if we have no initrd in this sense, then the first measurement would be the one that we entered the root of S.
Okay. Yes.
What about things that happen after measured boot in user space? Is systemd involved in any of that? I mean, you mentioned UDEV and how, you know, like, I used the TPM two command line tools to do things like my.
So, I mean, part of this, what I'm talking about here next summer is, I would like to get to a world where we actually measure lots of things during the whole runtime. Like, for example, that systemd confex and sysx, right? These things that are extensions that extend etsy and user, that we make measurements when we apply them, or that systemd nspawn, when it starts a container, it measures the image that it does. It's a different use case, though, right? Like, the way I see it, the early boot time stuff, right? The firmware stuff until basically the boot settled. That is most, like, the primary use case is probably for that is disk encryption, right? Or any other kind of, like, credential encryption or something like this, right? Like, so where you can nicely predict stuff. The other part, right, like during runtime, you know, if we do a measurement for every container that starts and stops and starts and stops, right? This is not something that settles. This is something that goes on for all eternity, right? So this is not realistically predictable, right? Like, because you don't know, like, during the runtime of your node, what's going to start and stop and start and stop, right? So the use case for that kind of stuff is remote attestation, right? Which is a very different, use case, even though technically it's not that different, right? Like, you still validate your event log. So right now, the functionality that we provide and release to some new versions mostly deals with the stuff until it settles. But I think we should, much of the work I'm doing is to extend this for the remote attestation stuff as well. So that basically we always know exactly. You know, like, I want to come to the system definition where for every file in the system we can cryptographically make a proof where it comes from, right? And this is kind of part of that thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, that answers my question. Thank you.
What else is new? Systemd PCR log, we talked about what that is. It's a varlink, it now has a varlink IPC interface. This is in particular to request policy rebuilds, which is supposed to be used by things that, I don't know, FW update D, for example, when they update the firmware, because if you update the firmware, the measurements will change. And in particular, if we have no golden measurements for these firmware updates, then you have to temporarily loosen the policy a little bit, like you have to kick out the firmware-related measurements from your policy, so that you later then lock it down against in what you actually saw. So for that, we added a varlink IPC interface. What's also pretty relevant is that systemd PCR log now places a second copy of the policy data that it generates in the ESP. This is slide doesn't make sense. Now places a copy of generated copy. I apparently didn't proofread this. Anyway, so yeah, it places a copy of a generated copy in the ESP of the policy generates. And this is crucial because the systemd PCR unlock policy is what you need to unlock the root file system, right? So however, if you needed to unlock the root file system, it needs to be available at InnerID times. It's one of these questions of secure parameterization, except that we cannot actually encrypt this data, which is usually what we do for secure parameterization, because after all, it contains the information that we need to unlock the encryption of the TPM. But anyway, so key really is we now manage this automatically, so that if you use that you finally can use PCR log reasonably for the rootFS itself. We have only a couple of minutes left. I got some smaller things here on the list. I think I'm going to skip over this and very quickly go just to what's next, just to have mentioned this. And vPCRs is kind of the next thing. Like I mentioned earlier, that we now have the log and we have the measurement APIs, but it's not so useful because there are no PCRs left. NVPCR is supposed to be a solution to this because TPMs actually have a concept called NV indexes, which are like these little bits of memory that you can use on the TPM and that are persistent. And you can use them in many ways. And one way is to you can use them as additional PCRs, which is really weird actually, because NV, as the name suggests, is non-volatile. PCRs are inherently volatile, right? Like, they're supposed to reset when you boot. And I don't know how else I would call that then very much volatile. But anyway, you can use them like this. So basically, this would make the allocation of them non-volatile, but the contents volatile. This basically allows us to have more PCRs. And that is kind of necessity for the stuff that I was talking about earlier, where we start measuring confex, sysx, containers, and things like this. Because we need more PCRs for this. So I talked to TCG and stuff like that, and they're actually going to assign a NV index range to us. Like, NV indexes are identified by 32-bit integers, basically. So there's no file names, no other kind of sensible naming. There's just numbers. Hence, it's essential that We have like an ID range, like a number range assigned to us, and they said that they're gonna do this, and then they wrote it on it, but then they figured out that maybe they don't want to do this for every open source project that comes along, and wanted us to assign it to Linux, whatever that is, instead. So we convinced them, I think, like they still haven't voted about this, to assign it to the UAPI group. Once we have this, basically anyone who needs an NV index for any purpose whatsoever can come to that group, and we'll hand it out to them like a sub-range, like further delegation. Yeah, I think my time's mostly over. I think the future is looking bright then, because we actually can measure everything we want. But the very little time I have left, I would like to spend on questions.
Thanks for the update. If my memory serves me well, I remember we discussed a few years ago at some conference the HOMED, the double encryption of HOMED, when HOMED is stored on encrypted root, when HOMES are stored on encrypted root. And I believe you said that then that we shouldn't actually encrypt root because it's from the distribution, so there are no secret things. We can rebuild it. And now you're talking about decrypting root with TPM and so what about double encryption of homes?
So the model I'm going for is that slash user is only DM variety protected, and that the root FS, which contains etsy and var and home, is DM crypt encrypted, right? So I think OS resources don't make any sense to encrypt. They need to be authenticated, however, and the other stuff needs to be encrypted. But I don't know how this looks in the end, right? Like, you know, for example, there has been people have added support for OPAL, like for hardware encryption. I think it might make sense to you because OPAL is kind of free, right? Like, because the hardware does the encryption for you and there's no latency involved and things like that. It comes at a much weaker level of security though, right? Like, because it's opaque to the operating system, they don't know what's going on. And Microsoft, for example, they turned off OPAL support in Windows because many of the hardware manufacturers were found out to lie on the OPAL stuff. So, but I think it might be good enough to avoid the double encryption thing with HOMED, right? Like, so that we can basically say, I have the home directory, it's going to be OPAL protected, but then HOMED inside of it, right? Because then you get the strong properties from the HOMED stuff, but you still get some weak form of integrity pseudo functionality from OPAL, which might be enough, which, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's like, you know, if you have a high level of encryption on top, then the lower level, I think, can be weaker. But this is, of course, for everybody to decide. But yes, I hope that gives an answer.
I mean, regarding HOMED double encryption, I have some ideas to reuse block crypto, which is a thing that's used in embedded Linux on like Android and stuff. I think it would allow us to do double encryption with no performance cost. But it would require work in the kernel. I'm going to talk more about it tomorrow in my HOMED talk.
Okay.
In an earlier talk today, there was mentioned that if you use the TPM module very heavily, sometimes they crash. That's the first thing. What does systemd then? Because the more we use that, and then the TPM module somehow crashes, then what does systemd?
What do you mean by TPM module?
Like? It doesn't answer anymore. It may happen. Let's say there's a bug in the firmware of the TPM, and what is with suspend? So is thing, because I mean, there's the problem that you have with Wi-Fi firmwares that you have quite often that they gonna die in some circumstances. So what does systemd do then?
I mean, it's like how it usually is, right? Like stuff that is not used much generally doesn't work, right? But then there's also the thing, Windows has been relying on TPM for a long time, and at least I think in the professional versions by default and things like that. So generally, hardware these days, the TPMs are fine. They'll not be great, but they could be good enough. So I don't know, if a TPM doesn't work, and we have reports about this because we start measuring something and some people have run into problems with this, I think it's like any driver you have. It needs to be fixed, and I think as we start actually making use of this, they will be. And we're in the luxurious position that we come 15 years later than Windows and all the other ones did, so they probably solved all the worst shit for us. That said, because we have the luxury that we came from 15 years later, like systemd PCR log and the signed PCR policies both make use of functionality that was simply not available in TPMs when Windows started the thing. So this makes our life much nicer. We have much nicer security properties because of that, because we don't have to deal with rollback issues and things like this. But it also means that this functionality, of course, not as well tested. But I don't know, because most of the TPM firmware just copies nowadays the reference implementation. Most of the bugs exposed are kind of the bugs that everybody has, and we can probably deal with this. This is my assumption.
Regarding full disk encryption, Syscaller, which is a kernel fuzzer, has a big load of open file system bugs. If you do you know Syscaller, the kernel fuzzer?
Yeah.
So it has a bunch of open file system bugs. When it opens corrupted file systems, there's a bunch of bad thing happening, and I would say the fix rate for file system bugs in Linux is kind of meh. So what is your view on using full disk encryption to protect against just maliciously malformed file system images?
Well, I mean, this is a fundamental problem at all, right? Like the kernel file system people, they very clearly that they do not consider it an issue, like a bug in their file system, if you have a rogue file system and it exploits the kernel. And I can understand this. They are some of the most complex data structures we have in our systems these days. So that's why I think all this integrity tests on this need to come on the block layer below it. That's why I think DMVerity is the right thing to go for /user, and DMCrypt and DMIntegrity for /home, right? Like, so I am very strongly, I mean, this is some reason why I don't think FScrypt and things like that put the trust and the security above it are gonna be a solution, right? Like, because they put the integrity and the trust on the wrong layer, where you not solving the problem of first trusting your file system in the first place, right? So that's my answer. Okay, I think our time is over.
That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.